Last week, the Wall Street Journal published an article on how video gaming is good for us. And we'll talk about how researchers are finding that video game playing is changing the brain for the better. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 14th. By the way, happy Pi Day to all the math geeks listening right now. According to the article, a growing body of research suggests that gaming improves creativity, decision-making, multitasking, perception, improved hand-eye coordination, and even vision changes that improve night driving ability. We will talk with a UW-Madison psychologist who studies how electronic games affect our abilities, about the benefits of video gaming this hour, and we will welcome your questions. And we will wonder if you buy into this upside or want to challenge it. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is C. Sean Green, an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was among the researchers quoted in the Wall Street Journal article on When Gaming is Good for You, which is linked to our Facebook page and our website. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning.
So since I'm only familiar with a few different video games, the last time I played a video game extensively anyway was, I think, back in the 70s when Pac-Man was big. Are all video games alike?
Well, definitely not. It's kind of one thing that we try to make really clear in our research is that not all video games do the same thing. So often parents will ask me what the effects of video games are, and I can no more answer that than if a parent asked a nutritionist, you know, what are the effects of food?
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on what type of game you play. So the type of game that I've studied in particular are what we call action games. They're ones that have lots of fast motion, things appearing in the periphery. You have to keep track of lots of things at once. And these seem to have really different effects than other types of games.
You know, give us a sense. What are the other types of games besides action games?
So there's, you know, tens of different genres. There's what they call role-playing games. You know, there are real-time strategy games. You know, there are action games. There are, you know, kind of many genres and subgenres. There are adventure games, you know, and you can kind of divide those into, you know, smaller genres. You know, they're within action games, they're first-person shooter games, you know, or third-person shooter games or fighting games. And then the same would be true of the other genres. So there's kind of a really rich hierarchy of types of games, and each different, you know, in the end, each game has a different set of content, a different set of processing demands, and thus we'll do something slightly different.
Uh-huh. What is Angry Birds?
So Angry Birds is one that so this is one challenge in the research is that, you know, the types of games, you know, evolve as quickly as we can do research on it. So when we very first started studying games about a decade ago, you know, there were no tablets or phone games. You know, we kind of put them in amongst, you know, we call them tablet games, you know, or mini games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's, you know, it's one kind of difficulty in the full approach is that there's no hard and fast rules that you can kind of take a game and say, all right, this is absolutely a game of the genre X. You know, lots of games have characteristics that cross genres. So, you know, some of the work that we're doing now, we try to kind of go away from the genre-based approach and say, all right, well, what does this game actually make you do?
I see.
It's just a kind of a, you know, games are complex by nature, so, you know, it's a difficult computational problem.
Sure. Well, I guess we'll, when we saw this article, we thought it would be interesting to talk about it, since, you know, the headline is When Gaming is Good for You, and it seems like most of the time, all you hear about is that video games are too violent and that people are concerned that they're harmful, especially to children. Why isn't this upside, this research you've done that shows an upside, more well-known?
Well, I wish I could answer that. I think it's a question of, you know, what ends up getting, you know, big press releases. To some extent, the violence aspect of games is one that parents care a lot about. So it probably explains why it gets far more attention than potential benefits. But just in the past few weeks, I've seen multiple articles. A colleague just presented work at a conference demonstrating that playing these same type of action games improves vision in people who had cataracts. So I saw that got a lot of press. You know, things just get little pockets of press.
We are seeing some more press on the beneficial effects of video games. Can you just kind of give us some of the general benefits of video games?
Yeah. So in kind of our work, we've looked at mainly perceptual or kind of decision making skills. So these would be things down to what we consider kind of low-level vision, like your ability to read lines on an eye chart, is improved from playing these action games, up through things like, your ability to keep track of multiple things, kind of moving all at once, or to pick out a target amongst a bunch of distracting objects. So, you're trying to look for one particular object amongst a bunch of things that kind of look like it, and you can better pick out the target. Up through things like your ability to switch between tasks. So if you have multiple tasks and you have to switch between them, there's typically a cost that's associated with it. Every time you go from, your web browser to your email, there's some little cognitive cost from doing that switch. And that cost is actually diminished in people who play these games.
So how is the research on video games conducted?
So it, really strongly depends on the area or the discipline. So for us, we have kind of a two-stage approach. The first thing we do is we usually recruit people who either play lots of action games just naturally or people who don't play them at all and kind of look and see what the natural experiment does. Are people who naturally play these action games better than people who don't naturally play the action games? But this has the kind of obvious downside that you can't tell if it's the action games that are actually causing the effect. It could very easily be the case that people who are born with good visual skills are attracted to games. So what we then do is actually take people who don't normally play action games and actually train them. For our recent studies, we train them for 50 hours over the course of 2 or 3 months and see how their vision changes from pre-tests before they've had any game experience to post-test after they've kind of played the action game for some time. And we compare them to a control group that kind of comes to the lab with the same schedule. They do all the same things except for they play a non-action game. So they play games like The Sims or Restaurant Empire. They're kind of simulation games that don't have all the processing characteristics that the action games have. And so what we really want to know is, well, do the people who play the action games, who are trained on the action games, improve more than the people who play the control simulation games?
Okay. Well, the article says that the action games, the ones that might be considered the violent action video games, actually had the strongest beneficial effect on our brains. Why do you suppose this is?
Whether or not the violence, to some extent it's an issue that we're interested in working on, whether or not the violence is actually important. The fact that all the games that we use as training games do have a violent component to them is a real hindrance for us because, there are certain populations that we can't use the games with. We can't use these games with children because of the violence. So it's something that we're, really interested in, whether the violence matters. Most of our hypothesis suggests that the violence itself isn't necessarily important. It's just something that happens to be an off-the-shelf game. So if we can make a game ourselves that has many of the same processing demands but just don't have that violent aspect, that we'll get the same results without the violence.
Well, what about, though, the violence in the games? Is there any evidence that this negatively impacts the brain in any way?
So there's a large body of research on the effect of violence in video games. To some extent, they have, a more difficult task in that field because unlike, my work where you can do a training study and, say, all right, well, we're actually going to show a causal relationship, they can't do long-term training studies where they expose children to violent games. So they kind of are stuck doing the natural experiments that have confounds, but I would say the overarching body of research in there, hundreds if not thousands of papers on the topic, and more than a little bit of controversy in the field, is that there is a small but significant increase in aggression that occurs as a result of playing violent video games. I have a close friend and colleague that's kind of one of the leading experts at Iowa State on this field, and the way he'll often explain it is that aggression you can think of as a continuum. You know, from the left side of a graph where someone is absolutely not aggressive at all to the far right side where someone is very aggressive or even violent, where violent would be, you know, aggression with the intent to cause serious physical harm. And the size of the effect from playing games, you know, moves people just a little bit on that scale. So if you have a child who has no risk factors for aggression whatsoever, the violent games are unlikely to, you know, result in any behavioral manifestation. If, on the other hand, you have a child who has many risk factors for aggression, that little change from playing the games might end up having a big practical effect. Excuse me. So, you know, I would say that's kind of where the body of research is. There's a small effect, and whether or not it's important, practically important, depends a lot on the individual child.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about how video games can change the brain, and for the better. There's research showing that video game playing can improve decision-making, multitasking, creativity, even our vision, our hand-eye coordination, and other functions and behaviors. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on the upside of video game playing. Our guest is C. Sean Green, an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison, who has studied the effects of video game playing and was featured in an article recently in the Wall Street Journal entitled "When Gaming is Good for You." We welcome your thoughts and questions and reactions. Are you a video game player? Do you think they're beneficial or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be sunny to partly cloudy statewide today, and it's going to be warm. High temperatures mainly in the 70s today, but cooler near Lake Superior. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, we will, after 8 o'clock this morning, we are going to talk about the wolf in Wisconsin and the State Assembly early this morning passing a bill that would establish a wolf hunting season in the state. We will talk with a retired DNR biologist about this wolf hunting season and what impact that might have on the wolf in Wisconsin coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. After 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will talk about Tuesday's primaries in Mississippi and Alabama. That's coming up after 9. So stay with us. Right now we are talking about video games and wondering if they are good for us. Our guest is a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, C. Sean Green, and he has done some research on the effects of video game playing. And we're talking about how video game playing is shown to improve people's creativity, their hand-eye coordination, decision-making, perception, and other aspects. And we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first caller is Jennifer in La Crosse. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Morning.
I should probably preface it. I'm not a gamer, and the last time I ever played a game, it was a computer game, and it was Oregon Trail, and I think it was about third grade.
So. Mm-hmm.
But I guess I know this sounds bad, but it seems kind of reckless to publish these kind of results and have this positive spin on gaming, because I just listened to a program by your colleague, Kathleen Dunn, where she had a expert on, and he talked about the latest school shooting, and I'm not saying that video games are the sole reason for, you know, an uptick in violence in schools. But he did talk about games and their component with violence, and he talked about in World War II, they did studies where in situations where soldiers were in a deadly force situation, they didn't respond with force because they had no training in it. And so the Army did tons of research, and they found that video game, I guess eventually on in history, but eventually later on, that video games are a very useful tool in getting soldiers to use deadly force and violence against others in situations. So, I mean, it seems to me that it's kind of reckless to go on and say that there's so many useful things when it comes to video games, when it's been proven that they do contribute to violence, and they do culminate violence in some people.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, I don't know if I want to go into whether it's reckless or not for us to be discussing the research that shows an upside, but Professor Green, what do you think?
Well, I don't know if I want to get into reckless. I mean, to some extent, science is what it is. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the idea, you know, to some extent, you know, often the case, you know, it was the case with the Wall Street Journal article. Video games are often treated as having either good effects or bad effects. But like any complex kind of training regimen, you know, they're likely to have kind of myriad effects. And so to some extent, it does a disservice to the field to not say, well, what are all the effects of playing the games? You know, could they have beneficial effects? So, for instance, you know, adults who have amblyopia, which is kind of colloquially known as lazy eye, you know, there's typically not good treatments for amblyopia. And what researchers at UC Berkeley have recently shown is that playing these games actually, you know, improves their vision by several lines on an eye chart, whereas before they kind of didn't have any real hope for improvement. So, you know, there are definitely applicabilities to it, you know, practical effects from the benefits or practical benefits of playing the games. Mm-hmm. As for the violence component, what there is not is actually clear research linking video games to actual violence. So that's one thing that the people in the field are actually careful to usually state, but will tend to get kind of blown up by, you know, media articles. Aggression's not the same as violence necessarily. Violence would be an extreme form of aggression. Typically, when aggression gets measured in the lab, it's with things like kind of priming sheets where you will see the letters K-I blank blank, and you have to decide what two letters to fill in. And if you fill in, say, C-K to make kick, that's indicative of aggression, whereas if you fill in L-T to make kilt, mm-hmm. that's not aggressive. Mm-hmm. So this is the type of thing that they're talking about when they're talking about increases in aggression. They're very kind of, you know, introspective types of aggression. Typically, it's not the case that they're measuring real-world violence. And as far as I have seen in the field, there's not actually good research linking video games to real world types of violence.
Do you know, Professor Green, if the military did use video games to teach soldiers how to shoot?
That I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whether they've used them to actually teach to shoot. I know they, you know, the Army has a game, you know, America's Army, that they use to kind of teach various basic things to new recruits. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting theoretical question of whether or not shooting, there is recent work, whether or not shooting in, say, a game will actually make you better at shooting in the real world. You know, shooting an actual gun is very different than shooting a gun with a joystick on a controller. There's all kinds of things that aren't the same. So, you know, I'm not actually aware of any research that's shown that playing a shooter game with, say, a keyboard will make you a better shooter of a gun in real life.
Mm-hmm. Harold on Facebook writes, as a dentist, video games have been an immense help to increasing my hand-eye coordination and reflex, especially the more modern games with motion controls. Video games can be good, but some moderation is needed as well. And I read in that article that surgeons all were studied, and the video gaming that they participated in improved their, I guess, hand-eye coordination and their reflexes and such.
Yep, that's also true. Actually, in some of the studies, the amount of time spent playing these types of video games is a better predictor of surgical skill than number of, you know, surgeries completed or number of years of training. So many programs are actually looking to incorporate that type of visual motor training for their perspective. You know, it's typically in endoscopic surgery where you have kind of the camera and you're manipulating kind of instruments and looking at the effects on a camera, which is obviously really similar to the way video games work.
Yeah, but he says video games can be good, but some moderation is needed as well. I mean, do we know? I mean, how is there a certain amount of video game playing that's beneficial and you might cross a line?
So there is, you know, a growing, you know, a new body of research looking at addiction in video games. And what's striking about that particular research is that, you know, it's much the same way that drug addiction tends to work, that some people become, you know, actually addicted, where they suffer negative real life consequences. So for kids, it's things like not completing their homework because they're playing video games instead, or lying to their parents about how much they play video games. Some kids, it doesn't take very much gameplay, and they'll start to suffer those negative consequences. Other kids can play lots and lots and not suffer those. So it's very similar to the way some people can take addictive substances and not become addicted to them. Others have almost no experience and become very addictive.
We are going to check news, and then we will continue talking about video games and how they affect the brain. Our guest is C. Sean Green, assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. If you would like to join in with a question, maybe your own experience, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about how video games, playing video games, can be good for the brain. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Wednesday, March the 14th. We are talking about research that was detailed recently in a Wall Street Journal article about how playing video games can change the brain for the better and improve things like decision-making and multitasking and creativity and other functions. And we're welcoming your reactions and questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have provided a link to the Wall Street Journal article on Facebook and our website. Our guest was interviewed for that article. He is C. Sean Green, assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he's done some research on the effects of video gaming on the brain. And let's take some more calls. Nick in Star Prairie is with us next. Hello, Nick.
Good morning, Joy and Steve.
Morning. It's C. Sean Green.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I played Call of Duty, and as far as real-life situation, I can acquire a target faster in real life than I can in a video game, just because of the, you know, I can articulate my arms better than I can with my fingers and the movement on the game stick. The other thing I see in gaming situations, especially online, is dependent on the game you're playing and what mission you're in. Your decision-making is different. If it's just a free-for-all, everybody's running around just trying to get as many kills as they can. But if you're in a game that you don't respawn once you're dead, then people slow down and make better decisions about staying in cover and stuff like that. So the one lady called in about the Army playing video games. Well, that American Army, that game can last up to 36 hours, maybe even longer. And once you're dead, you're dead, and you've got to sit. You can't play the game again until that portion of the game's over. So it's definitely takes you to, depending on the game you're playing, he's right about your decision-making can become better once you understand what the game's about.
All right. What can you tell us, Professor Green, about playing the game and your decision-making?
Well, I mean, to some extent, you know, both situations, whether it's a free-for-all or, you know, if you die, you're dead, you know, require a certain type of decision-making. You know, it just, you know, the way at least we would think of it in psychology is that the strategies you take when you know that it's a free-for-all and if you die, you just automatically respawn, having that knowledge should affect the type of decisions that you make. You can be a little bit more outgoing with your play if you know that those are the rules of the game. And whereas if, you know, when you die, you have to wait until the whole thing is over, well, then you know that you have to play less outgoing style. And so what we tend to look at is, well, when people play lots of different games that require different types of decision-making strategies, what we see is that they basically very quickly learn what the right decision-making strategy is in new situations. So it's what's known in psychology as learning to learn. When they encounter a new situation, people who have played lots of games can more quickly come to the right type of decision-making strategy. So that's one reason that we think that the effects of games are so broad is because they don't teach any one particular skill. They teach you how to learn new skills or learn to make decisions in new situations.
We have a comment on Facebook. Patrick writes, does the creativity brought on by video games outweigh the decrease in social skills?
Well, I mean, I guess I'll address the second part first. I'm not sure, well, just the whole thing. I'm not sure as a kind of a psychologist I can address the relative weighting of those things. You know, you can say that X occurs and that Y occurs. Whether, you know, the X outweighs the Y is really more a societal question than one for a psychologist.
Yeah, we'll talk some about, so the video games or playing certain video games does indeed decrease our social skills?
Not that I've actually, I haven't seen any research indicating that. There's actually a decent body of research that's tried to hit back against the kind of the belief that, well, there's like a gamer sitting by themselves in their parents' basement, not interacting with anyone. Even the games that are kind of the most maligned, the shooter games, today they're typically played online with friends, and there's kind of a rich social structure that goes along with that. You know, people have teammates that they're used to, and they have methods of communication. You know, it's different than real-life communication or, you know, face-to-face communication. But it's still, you know, a very social experience. Games that have no online component now or no multiplayer where you interact with other people are becoming more and more rare. By and large, you know, most, especially games, say, on platforms like Xbox or PlayStation, almost always contain a component where you actually get to play with other people, and it's usually a big attraction for gamers that they actually get to interact with others as they play.
Mm-hmm. And how are we measuring that some video game playing results in increased creativity?
So that was not my research. That's research at Michigan State. I believe it's Linda Jackson. If I'm not mistaken, they used kind of a standard test. It's called the Torrance Test of Creativity. You know, what happens in is they give you kind of a picture. If anyone searches for Torrance Test of Creativity, I think it gives examples. So they give you a picture, and you have to come up with what that picture might represent. You know, it's kind of an abstract picture, and you have to say, well, what are the things that this might look like? So it's kind of a standardized test of creativity is how that ends up working. And I believe in their research, people who played computer games. I don't know that they separated by genre of game. It was computer games altogether. Scored higher on that test.
Mm-hmm. Do we know if there's a difference in the way video games affect the brains of women versus the way they affect the male brain?
Well, in terms of the actual neural basis, I don't know that we do, but we do. There is research on different behavioral effects. So a group in Toronto was interested in the fact that females tend to underperform males in certain spatial skills, things like mental rotation. So if I give you an object and ask you what it would look like rotated 45 degrees, females tend to perform more poorly at those than males across all males and all females, of course. And the reason that's of interest is that performance on those type of spatial tasks is actually really predictive of entrance into STEM fields, so science, technology, engineering, and math. So what this group actually asked is whether or not playing action games could reduce the gender effects that you see, or the sex effects that you see in these spatial skills. So they trained both men and women on an action game, and what they saw is that both groups improved, but the females actually improved at mental rotation, but the females actually improved by more than the males, and thus really greatly diminished or, you know, in some cases completely eliminated the sex differences. So at least in that group's hands, females have improved by, have shown stronger benefits than males in these spatial tasks as a result of playing action games.
Take another call from Joan Marie in Williams Bay. Hello, Joan Marie.
Oh, good morning. In the study of video game playing, has the effect of interruption been studied? Interrupting the attention while playing, and the effects. I have often observed children that are interrupted while playing or watching TV, and they. They become frustrated and angry, and I think that's where aggression comes from, or one of the sources. Can he comment on that, please?
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure of any actual empirical data on the question. So there is a concept in psychology known as flow. You know, it's basically total immersion, where you kind of lose track of yourself and you're totally immersed in the task that you're doing. So it's often described, you know, in high-level athletes or musicians, where they become totally part of what they're doing. And it's also something that's often experienced while playing video games. So I don't know any particular work in video games specifically, but it is the case that being interrupted when you're in a flow state is a little bit jarring. When you're totally immersed and something big enough comes in that knocks you out of the flow state, it can be somewhat disrupting. But again, I don't know of any specific research that has looked at it in the context of games.
Mm-hmm. Does family upbringing play a role in the impact of video games at all? Like, for instance, I don't know, homes in which parents are more involved in their kids' lives or even their kids' play, that maybe those kids are better off?
I would say a totally open question. You know, the study of games is reasonably new, so you know, there's a lot of open questions. You would assume that, you know, any factors that affect the cognitive development of a child would interact with the effects of playing games. So things like, you know, upbringing or the extent to which parents, you know, attend to their children, would play a role. But again, it's not something that I at least know of that particular question has been addressed.
We are talking about the impact of playing video games and how video game playing can change our brains, and in some cases, for the better. Talking about this research that was outlined in a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about how researchers are finding that video game play is improving decision-making and multitasking and creativity. And other functions. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your experiences. Are you a gamer? Do you find video games beneficial? Or are you concerned about video game playing still? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be sunny and unseasonably warm today. Highs today statewide in the 70s. I'll take it. Partly cloudy tonight, a slight chance of storms in eastern Wisconsin with some areas of fog in the southeast. And tomorrow, there is a chance of morning rain in the southeast. Otherwise, another partly to mostly cloudy day and unseasonably mild again in the southern part of the state tomorrow. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 14th. It's our big question debate coming up after 7. I'll have two guests with us who have differing views on whether we should stay in Afghanistan or leave immediately in light of the recent horrifying and tragic events. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. The big question debate on whether we should stay or go with regards to Afghanistan. Right now we're talking about the effects of video games. While many people are worried about the effects that violent video games are having on our children, there's a lot of research that shows that video games can change the brain for the better. Video games can improve our minds in many ways, including improving creativity and multitasking and decision-making. We are talking with a researcher who has researched the effects of video games. He is also an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, C. Sean Green. And our next caller is Bill in Milwaukee. Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm wondering if there's any research that would tend to show among particularly groups of boys who have, just from observation, less acute social skills, that the greater the amount of time on video games, the greater decrease in social skills. And this would be something that would be probably hard to measure, because in one case you're measuring in a linear sort of way, whereas social skills tend to be more more intuitive in terms and in terms of observation and the opinion of the observer. But I will tell you, as a psychotherapist, that I have seen, particularly among adolescent boys, the lower the social skill set, the less intuitive the boy, the more drawn to the stereotypic sort of situation of the boy sitting in the basement at the computer screen and not having opportunities to learn to intuit social context and social situation.
And Bill, by social skills, just courtesy, conversation,
right, and the capacity to look at another individual and interact with another individual and accurately assess how that other person might be feeling, thinking, and so forth. Males, I think, have a more difficult time with that sort of intuition in the first place, but there are some males who are distinctly limited, you know, perhaps along what we would consider some milder degree of the Asperger syndrome, though that is going to become an adjective that's dropped out of the vocabulary. But it seems to me, from observation, I don't have any tools to measure this, but I see boys in my office who are the stereotypic boy sitting in the basement at the video game, and I see the greater the time on the video game, the lower the social skill.
I get it. Well, Professor Green, what do you say?
It's not something that's easy to address experimentally. My intuition is that those are correlated but might not be causally related. People who naturally have very introverted, you know, social dispositions might tend to play games that are not social in nature, but it's not the games that are causing the decrease in social skills. You know, to some extent, the decrease in social skills is what's causing the game playing. Those are the questions, though, that end up being really difficult to tease out experimentally if you're not able to kind of do a training study. And I'm reasonably sure no one's done a training study on that type of question.
Yeah. You seem like a reasonably social person, Professor Green. Do you play video games?
Yeah, actually.
What kinds do you play?
Sports games, real-time strategy games. My family lives in Florida, so it's the main interaction I have with my younger brother is, you know, we play video games together once or twice a week. We don't have the relationship where we'd sit and necessarily talk on the phone for 3 hours, but we will sit and play video games together, you know, online for 3 hours.
Sure.
So it's a good way to interact with, you know, and friends that I have from various schools I've attended. It's kind of a way to continue having a relationship with people that you kind of otherwise would drop out of your life.
Yeah, and our caller reminded me of this. The typical gamer is not necessarily some a teenager in the parents' basement. It's a 34-year-old, I think, or somebody like a mid-30s male is the typical gamer, though 40% of gamers are women.
Yeah, that would be the average age, according to the last numbers that I saw, somewhere in the mid-30s for the average gamer. To some extent, you know, so my generation, I'm 31, I was probably right in the first generation that's had video games for my whole life. So, you know, as, you know, I've grown, they've kind of continued to be part of life. So the average age you'd expect will continue to kind of, you know, stick in this kind of range. It's not just kids that play games, you know, it's, you know, a whole range of adults. They don't necessarily play the same games, but, you know, at this point, it's a very kind of, it's throughout the culture.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call from Scott in Cadott. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
I am a gamer myself. I'm also a technology and engineering education teacher at a high school. And I wanted to just comment on the sense of pride and accomplishment that I think some high schoolers or gamers maybe don't have, that the person that maybe doesn't spend as much time gaming does. For example, some of the high school students that I have in class, they will spend numerous hours at night gaming. But in comparison to some students that maybe work on automotive with their parents or doing some construction projects on the side or just working, seem to have a sense of accomplishment, you know, and pride, I guess, in what they're doing in comparison to what students that are gaming a lot do. Also, I have a brother that lives in California and a brother that lives in Milwaukee. They're both gamers. And just recently we had a conversation on the phone where I was finishing a class in the evening, and I spoke with my brother in California, and he was just finishing a over-the-road truck driving game where he was playing the video game for 12 hours straight. And we were talking about me accomplishing the class and him still sitting at home playing his game. So I guess that the sense of accomplishment is probably not as great as it would be if you weren't to spend so much time gaming.
A reaction, Professor Green?
Well, I mean, to some extent, different, you know, people who play games often find those things to be, you know, big accomplishments. So, you know, I know plenty of people who find their, you know, level 70 character in a game to be a very big accomplishment, and they're incredibly proud of it. Where someone who doesn't play the game would think of it as, well, why would you care about, you know, your video game character? You know, people do, you know, to some extent, it's one reason that people actually like to play games, we believe, is because they do feel a sense of reward in the achievements that they get. You know, they feel a sense of learning, and they feel a sense of progression, and in the end, they find the achievements that they earn, you know, rewarding. And, you know, many game companies have kind of taken that and run with it. So, you know, most games now have, you know, little achievement badges you can win and kind of act as little rewards that people actually really want to get. You know, people want to say that they have all 30 achievements in a game.
Well, we have less than 30 seconds to go. Are you currently looking into a question on the effects of video games?
Yeah, I mean, so the main interest right now is really pursuing the question of, you know, why gaming benefits are so broad, and also, you know, what types of tasks they actually benefit.
Great.
So again, we're looking at learning to learn. Games teach you to learn new skills.
Well, I hope we can talk again when you know more about that. Thanks a lot for being with us. See Sean Green, assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the UW-Madison. Thanks to Amanda Magnus and to Bill Martins for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.